Off the Ball.
GAA.
This is the first full year again of the new rules, and we kind of concentrated on that over the winter, how we could play to our advantage, what we could do well. And as I said, we've got that consistency there in the league, which we've been striving for the last couple of years. And I think with the consistency, it brings confidence.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
All the way to the final, to be honest.
Yeah,
I believe in my county, and I suppose they're good at football, they just have to believe in themselves.
I love playing 12, I love playing 10, I love being on the pitch, to be honest.
Are you confident?
Absolutely not.
No!
Thank you for all the supporters, thank you for the team, thank you France. Merci la France, merci les baguettes, merci les croissants. Je vous aime, I love you.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Word on the Street. We are back. We weren't here last week. It was Prague week because last week, the Republic of Ireland national team were playing Czechia in our World Cup qualifier semi-final defeat to penalties. I think we're not saying anything that nobody already knows. It's been a week now. Rachel, how are you feeling?
Time is not a healer, Eve.
No. I was in the breakfast show the next morning, and that was maybe less than 12 hours, maybe 8 hours after it. And I was expecting a very cathartic experience, and it wasn't. But we've tried to have a bit of catharsis maybe today. We decided to look at the penalties and from a sports psychologist point of view. So this is kind of a little special episode. We've chatted to three people: performance psychology coach Rob Kelly, sports psychologist Dr. Aoife Quinn, and friend of the show and former Ireland international Keith Tracy, to get a wide-ranging view, I suppose, on what it means to take a penalty in that sort of high-pressure environment from the psychological side of it and from the player side of it. And, I mean, I can't wait for you all to listen to it, because my takeaway from all of this is I could never have been a professional footballer and do what they do. It sounds incredibly... I've taken penalties in my life before, never in any kind of situation like this. And it's stressful enough on a good day.
Yeah, and I was talking to Dr. Aoife Quinn, and it sounds so easy when you're talking through it. It's like, yeah, you just create your routine and you stick to your routine. And I had my mind made up. And then we spoke to Keith, and he's like, this is actually what it feels like in the moment.
Yeah.
As a sports person, especially as a footballer, it doesn't get any more pressured, especially, you know, we find penalty shootouts at like the worst possible times because it's a lot of the time it's your country on the line. So, yeah, I wouldn't be stepping up either. I think I'd be cowering away.
So this is the 45th episode of Word on the Street, which is a crazy thing to say. And we're presenting you, with three points of view. Let you come to your own conclusions, because I feel like whether you've played sport or not, or what kind of background you have, you're going to have a different answer as to would you put your hand up and take a penalty for Ireland? Let us know. Here, and we're going to start with performance psychology coach Rob Kelly. It is a week to the day since Ireland lost on penalties to Czechia that kind of dashed our World Cup dreams. So this episode is all about exploring the psychology behind penalties, the psychology of elite athletes. And we are delighted to be joined on the line by Rob Kelly, who is a performance psychology coach. Rob, how are you?
Hi, Eve. How are you? Thanks for having me on the show.
No problem at all. Now, I want to get right into it, and I'm going to ask you to explain, how does your work differ from perhaps other sports psychologists? Because I was looking through your website, looking through your work, and you seem to be a bit more unique in the way that you tackle sports psychology.
Yeah, so while I have a master's in exercise and sports psychology, my methodology definitely differs from other kind of sports psychology practitioners. So I'd have more of a consciousness-based approach. So basically, I'm kind of looking at more about how the mind works and then the importance of where we direct our awareness. And the easiest way to kind of explain that is I kind of use this cinema analogy. So if you imagine that you went into the cinema and say you went with your friend and maybe there was a stranger on the other side, and you imagine when the lights go down and you direct all your awareness into that screen, and if it was a horror movie, what starts to happen in your body as a result of directing all your awareness into that screen?
And continue if I'm interrupting you.
Yeah, so like I'm actually asking you, so like if you were in the cinema and there was a horror movie on and you had all your awareness directed into that movie, what starts to happen in your body as a result of having all your awareness directed into that movie?
You're talking to the wrong person. I hate horror movies, the goosebumps, and you'd start getting...
Yeah, exactly, exactly. You know, because most of us wouldn't really go to see the horror movie, but naturally when we direct all our awareness into that, all of a sudden you start to notice that your heart starts racing. Maybe you start to feel kind of tension and you're kind of going, oh my God, I don't want to watch this, or the goosebumps, like you said, Eve. But like, your subconscious doesn't know the difference between what's real and what's imaginary. So it completely relies on wherever you direct all your awareness. Now the movie ends and the lights come on, and rationally you know that was just a movie. Yet how did your body still react the way it did, as if it was reality? So when we talk about, you know, what happens to a footballer when he's going to take a penalty, it's all about where is he directing his attention, where is he directing his awareness. Like the mental movies that can come into your mind when you're getting ready to go and take that penalty. Like if he's thinking all of a sudden about, you know, the gravity of what does this mean for me now if I was to miss this penalty. Imagine that's playing out on the cinema screen and you're the character in that movie. All of a sudden your body starts tensing up and your heart starts racing. So it's all about where am I directing my attention and my awareness.
Because I was looking through kind of the teams that you've worked with, or the people that you've worked with throughout the years. I mean, Connacht and Irish Rugby, Elite and Amateur Golf, County and Club GAA, many more. And when I look at this Irish team that played last week, you have players like the likes of Troy Parrott, who played in the Premier League, who are now playing in the top level of the Dutch League. Then you have players maybe who are playing in the Championship or League One. There's a lot of different levels within that one team, and there's a lot of different levels that you've worked with throughout your career. Is it the same kind of underlying practice when you're working with athletes at a different level? Would, if you were working, just as a hypothetical, a penalty shootout for a kind of an amateur football club versus the likes of the Irish national team, is the principle the same?
Exactly. It's exactly the same. It's all about where am I directing my attention. So like even with the younger athletes that come to me now, it's the same principles that I'm teaching. It's the power of your mind. So wherever we're directing our attention directly affects our experience of that reality. So like look at those guys who were taking the penalties. I mean, how many penalties have they taken in their life? If it was in training, would they all just bang them in the back of the net? Chances are they would. But all of a sudden, when you're in that high pressure moment where it's all about visibility, Eve, like, I mean, you've like 40,000 people watching you stepping up to take this penalty, and then you've how many people on TV as well, you know, and if that movie starts playing out in your mind and you start paying more attention to that movie and the potential of missing that, all of a sudden it's the tension that creates in your body. And then the player goes up to strike that ball, they would just kind of, it's almost like they just don't have that power. They're not going through the ball the same way that they usually would be. So like what I developed over the years kind of working with athletes was my elite performance pressure signature. And that kind of, it's based off this methodology that I've kind of created where there's always the potential of two different athletes to show up at any time. So a coach might ask me to come down and kind of maybe look at a team or look at a player, and you'll see them in training, and in training, they're flying it. You know, they've so much skill, so looks like so much confidence and all the rest. And then they go out and they play in a, you know, a tournament, or they have to step up for a trial, and there's a different version of them that shows up, Eve. So this assessment that I created, it shows them their physical, their mental, and their emotional patterns under pressure. And we all have them. Like, it's the same principle as, say, public speaking. So like if you ever had to step up and do a speech in front of all these watching on the first time you do it, like, you know, and everybody understands like the interference that comes up when that happens. That's the exact same as going trying to take a penalty. You know, it's that interference that comes up. It's not that you're not able to naturally talk. Sure, you talk to people all day long. But all of a sudden, when you have to step up in front of a large audience, it's like that natural ability to talk sometimes gets blocked by this interference. And this interference is like the mind trying to predict what's the potential outcome of what I'm about to experience now. And it seems like it might be helping sometimes, but most of the times it's just completely blocking you from your natural ability.
I'm interested in what you said there about kind of on the training pitch, like these players could perhaps score, you know, any amount of penalties on the training pitch. And then, of course, it is such a different environment when you're after playing 120 minutes of a match, there's millions of people watching on the TV and then the stadium, and then you're standing up and you have the weight of a country on your shoulders. Because we've talked to many ex-professional footballers in the past week. I'm asking them, you know, how worth it is it to practice penalties constantly in the lead up to these tournaments? Like, is it even worth it? Some say no, you can't replicate that environment. Some say yes, you need to be practicing so consistently. But I suppose from your point of view, what's the value in the form of training you can do there? Or is there more value in how you can train your mind for these events?
Well, for me, it's kind of like if they're stepping up to take that penalty, I mean, look, as soon as the whistle goes, it's where does your mind go there straight away? I mean, if I'm telling a story there in my mind, or there's a narrative coming into my mind, am I going to be the one that has to take this penalty? If I take this penalty, am I going to be able to score it? Am I going to miss it? It's all the quality of their attention in those moments, Eve, like, yeah? So, like, you imagine then the coach is asking, okay, well, who wants to stand up to take this penalty? And there's probably a lot of guys there that really, really don't want to stand up to take that penalty. And then there's certain guys that just feel the weight of responsibility and just say, okay, well, I'm just going to have to do it because it doesn't look like anybody else is going to do it. But it's all about the quality of attention. Where is my mind going while I'm getting ready to step up to take that penalty? So you look at the players and they have their processes that they train, that they practice in training all the time. So they have a set process for this is the how I'm going to take this penalty. The only thing that interferes with that is, has my attention moved away from the process or is it staying completely present in that process? And that's what I mean. In training, it's much easier to keep your attention on the process. But when you go into that high-pressure moment where you start to imagine the outcome of it, all of a sudden that interference affects the process that you're trying to execute, we'll say.
And how, when you yourself are coaching athletes through situations like this, what sort of methods are you using to ensure that they can get the best out of that moment?
Well, it's all about, it's kind of recognizing when you're paying more attention to this alternate reality nearly, like, so it's like this story is coming into your mind about kind of missing these penalties. It's like you're not really in your body, Eve. It's like this sense that while you're there, you're not really there. Athletes would say it's almost like I'm standing outside of myself, Rob. And that's kind of like you're cut off, basically, from the head down. And you can't actually kick a penalty if you're not in your body at all. So it's all about initially training the self-awareness to recognize that when I put myself into this voluntary high-pressure moment, of course there's the potential for these narratives to come in and try to kind of affect what it is that I'm doing out there. Like when you know they're going to come in, you can't stop the mind from creating these thoughts. When you know they're going to come in, you can start to develop something to kind of bring you back into the body. So if you watch these players, you'll often kind of see, you know, that maybe they're kind of standing up on their toes. They're like looking for something to kind of ground themselves in this reality. Or they might take kind of this, say like Troy Parrott coming up to take his penalty, is quite a slow walk up that he took. You can be sure that he's probably quite aware of the ground beneath his feet while he's taking that walk up. It's all about trying to ground yourself in this reality and not be taken away somewhere else where that's actually affecting you. Because you think about, as soon as you start paying more attention to missing that penalty, just go back to the cinema analogy again. All of a sudden, what's happening in the body? My heart is racing. Everything is tensing up. And in that kind of assessment that I do, what I usually see is that, you know, they experience these either heavy legs or maybe jelly legs. And you just watch. I mean, if you just look at the way that it's executed then, you can see that it's like, oh my God, it's like he didn't really fully go through that. But the trouble is that when they don't realize it's to do with their attention, if they walk away thinking, oh my God, I'm really bad at penalties. Like, I don't want to take another penalty ever again. And it's nothing to do with that. They're not bad at taking penalties. sure, we know they can score penalties all day long in training. It's nothing to do with their skill level. It's to do with their attention and the quality of their attention.
Have you, can you see in athletes that you've worked with throughout the years, whether that be rugby players or GAA players or players that aren't even on a team, like golf or boxing, can you see improvements in a short space of time, or when you're working with athletes, is it more of a long-term project?
Well, in the beginning, it was definitely long-term. You know, it took a while, I suppose, for me. I was always kind of working on myself and kind of developing this methodology as well. But kind of, I suppose, in the last year, I would see a kind of a fairly rapid improvement in them. Like you'd see it anywhere from kind of 1 month to 2 months, they'd notice a change themselves. But I mean, it's not just, for me, it's not just about the sport as well, Eve. It's about their whole life. Do you know, when they start to recognize, okay, the importance of where I'm directing my attention isn't just about the sport, it's outside the sport as well. Like, it's in my daily life, it's in my relationships. Like for some of the younger athletes, you know, it's in their school, in college, how it affects them in preparation for exams. Like it's, we're kind of in this system where we're constantly being evaluated. And in that evaluation for an awful lot of athletes is that fear of visibility. And if you have like an experience in the past where, you know, you felt judged in front of other people, that can kind of get kind of solidified in the subconscious. And it can kind of start to run a program where you're afraid of experiencing that judgment again. So that's the other side that I look at. Like I have a background in sports hypnosis as well. So it's always very important to kind of see, has the athlete had these experiences in the past where they felt kind of judged in front of an audience? And to be honest, Eve, the majority of them have, because they're the ones that are putting themselves in that environment to receive the potential of that judgment.
And when you're kind of working with athletes and you're going through, as you mentioned, like processes like sports hypnosis, and this athlete is consciously choosing to work with a sports psychologist. Is there still a little bit of resistance from some athletes to getting help for their mental well-being? Or is this now such a huge part of this whole kind of elite sports that more and more athletes are kind of recognizing that to compete at the highest level, this is something that they need to be doing?
I definitely, like I'm 10 years now, I think, in my practice, and I've definitely noticed a difference in the last kind of couple of years. Maybe it's since COVID, I'm not really sure, but I've definitely noticed that there, you know, there's more interest in it. Like primarily I would have worked an awful lot with individual athletes who kind of have to perform a skill in that closed skill environment where all the eyes are on them. And I've just noticed that more in the teams that I work with, there's a higher percentage of the athletes within that team that really have a deep interest in doing this kind of work.
And I suppose just finally, because we need to let you go soon, but when you look at, say, for example, a player who missed a penalty in a shootout of the importance that the Ireland one had, how is the recovery from such a kind of a huge event in someone's career? Have you worked with athletes before that the issue isn't nearly going up to take a penalty, but recovering from missing one?
Absolutely. Like it's trying to get them back up there to take another penalty again. And that's the hardest thing for them, because the subconscious has, if it's an experience, Eve, like that's highly charged with emotion, which obviously missing a penalty last week was. Yeah, so there's an awful lot of emotion that's going on there. That's the language of the subconscious. So it pays more attention to this experience. And if that emotion is one of, you know, disappointment, sadness, guilt, whatever it is, it kind of holds on to it and it makes an association between penalty shootouts and this emotion. So the next time that athlete goes up to take the penalty, straight away the subconscious will be triggering this fear because it has that direct experience in the past. And an awful lot of the time, that's the type of athlete that I'll end up working with. It's somebody who's gone through the pain of missing these penalties or missing these kicks or not getting into this trial, And then it's the emotional experience they had afterwards that nearly holds them back more than their skill level at all could. So like those guys, for sure, what would they need to be doing afterwards? They'd need to be kind of recognizing, okay, well, first of all, I put my hand up, like, yeah, I had the courage to go up and to take that penalty. Not everybody did, but I did, you know, so they'd be looking at that, Eve. Like, the other thing is, courage cannot exist apart from fear. Like, they coexist together. You can't have one without the other, you know. So again, recognizing that they had the courage to go up to take it. And then the other thing is, like, in penalty shootouts, if the keeper goes the other way, everybody says, oh my God, great penalty, do you know? So it's like, it's not like any of the penalties were actually really bad as such. Had he gone the other way, you'd say, oh my God, that was a great penalty, do you know? So like, they just need to reframe it in their own mind and not allow that kind of, you know, that self-analysis that they end up doing. Maybe they go home and they're in their own space and in their own room, and they just go over it and over it and over it in their head. It's actually that analysis that just compounds the whole situation.
I think that's a lovely place to leave it. And this is a fascinating conversation. Thank you very much for joining us, and best of luck with everything.
Delighted to be joined by Dr. Aoife Quinn, sports psychologist. Aoife, as if the misery wasn't enough, we decided we're going to have to revisit Thursday night.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, talk about a gut-wrenching way to go out, and especially after what was a very tight match.
Yeah, and it's, I suppose, we were chatting off air there, and you said it's always topical, but especially now. And the question on everyone's lips this week in the office and out in the public is, are penalties a lottery? And as someone with your background, I think your best to answer this, because everyone has their opinion on it. You know, anyone who's never even taken part in the penalty shootout has an opinion on it. But I'm very excited to get your point of view on these things with backed up facts.
Absolutely. And I think that was a lot of the frustration from the Irish fans, was there was an opportunity there for us. And coupled with as well that attitude of, well, maybe they are a lottery and, you know, the luck is on the day, whether it's with you or it's with the other team. But certainly from a scientific perspective, we would not support the idea that penalties are a lottery. Okay. And what we would say, certainly from a sports psychology point of view, is that it's actually very disempowering for the players, for us to say, well, listen, go out and give it your best, but probably not going to be, you know, within your control, because we know that it is within the player's control. And when you look at the stats around successful penalties, you know, your a well executed penalty is very difficult to save.
Yeah. So the lottery, penalties are lottery, we think is a myth.
We think that is a myth, absolutely. And I don't think that it's a helpful attitude to give to players. And I think that we need to move away from that, to say that, no, this is something that is within our control. This is something that we could train for and we could prepare for. And that's going to be far more effective approach for the players than taking the, well, it's down to the keeper, or it's down to what's going on the day, or that bit of luck. Absolutely.
I think that that's something that we do, because penalties are such a high pressured situation, and we almost want, as a public, to take the pressure off, because it's a team game, and over, you know, they had over 90 minutes to win it, but we almost want to say, ah, penalties are lucky, because it's very easy to make someone a scapegoat, and we almost don't want to do that. It's coming from like a, not a place of accusation, but we want to take all of that pressure off.
Yeah. And I think, you know, and I understand that perspective. We have to remember that in top level sport, professional sport, there is pressure, you know, and that's a feature of the game. And that's something that we prepare for and that we have to manage. But again, I think that it is important that we do empower our players to say, no, this is something that we can work on. This is something that we can strive to improve. And also, I think managing the pressure, I mean, pressure at a very basic level is something that we perceive ourselves. So some players will see this as, oh, geez, this is a lot of pressure. And other players will say, put me in. I'm ready for this. So it is that perceived pressure. And then it's about preparing our players so that they can manage it. We're not going to say, oh, there's no pressure in this situation. That's not particularly helpful. But it is, you know, we absolutely can do plenty of things to prepare them to manage that pressure. So I think we've got to move away from that. Oh, it's just out of our hands. And no, this is within our hands, and let's work on it and work to improve it.
Did you find it interesting, so that in the build up to the game, when Hamer was asked if they'd be practicing penalties, he said that because they have such limited time together, he doesn't think it's the best use of their time?
Yeah. And the reality is that there's so many things that we can do in training to help players. So we know that when we put players into a pressure situation for penalties, their sense of competence in what they're doing is huge.
Yeah.
And if we have trained for these situations, now, obviously, we can never replicate what it's like to actually be in a penalty shootout in training, but we can do a lot of things to prepare ourselves for that. So we can get creative about creating pressure situations, for example. We can ask players, right, let's work on target training, for example. So let's get comfortable with being able to put the ball in all four areas of the goal. And particularly when you look at it, and I'm going back to the stats here, but I think it's great to go back to the data. When you look at effective penalties, and particularly for those players who go for those distal areas of the goal, so away from the centre, particularly up to that top third, it's very, very difficult to save a well-executed penalty that goes up into that zone. So if we can train our players to be confident in, I can go for that point and I can put it there, well, then the odds are going to be in our favour. So I think we've got to find the time. And I understand there's so many other things that we've got to work on. But in the situation where it comes down to penalties, and it's not just been, you know, this match, there's been other matches where it's come down to it as well. So it needs to be that, oh, well, sure, if we get time for it, it has to be a let's set this time aside. And let's focus on what we can do to prepare for it, because it is preparation. And then if players know, if you're doing things like going into training and saying, right, listen, keeper, this is where I'm planning on putting it. And again, well-executed penalty, even when you've told the keeper where you're putting it, very difficult to save. So you can imagine the confidence that that would give that player to be able to say, even when the keeper knows where I'm putting it, I can still be effective here. I can still be successful. That's huge for confidence. And that's what we want to be thinking about. And as I said earlier, to go back to that idea of control, it's so important, giving them that sense of control.
And in terms of, you know, when you speak about that well-executed penalty, how do we prepare players to take that in a pressure situation? Because you ask someone to take that at the start of training, you know, when it's just the coaches and the team around, and they might nail 9 out of 10. And then when you try and replicate that high pressure situation, it is in a penalty shootout situation, is your mental strength, is it far more important than the actual technical skill you have?
Yeah, and it's such a good point that you've made, because taking a penalty, it's not a particularly challenging task, particularly for a professional player. As you said, in training, if you were to ask them, go out there and do a few penalties, they'll probably be successful in 9 out of 10. Now, it is a challenge, because if you think about it, going back again to training, you know, ordinarily when you're playing as part of a team, you're sharing that responsibility. The focus is sort of shared between players. And now you go into that penalty situation and all of the focus is on you.
Yeah.
And you don't have the support of, yeah, sure, they're there behind you, but they can't help you with that task. And suddenly everybody's focus is in on that one individual player. That's challenging. And you can imagine as well, if you haven't kind of prepared for it, that's even more challenging. So we've got to kind of acknowledge that. And then what we want to think about is, okay, what is going to be our plan for this penalty? So say a pre-shot routine can be really effective. So this is where we would work with the individual player, because everybody's going to be different. We want to kind of figure out, okay, how are they approaching this? So some players would have what we call kind of escapist behaviors, where they're thinking, I don't really want to do this and I just want to get it over with, and they rush it and then it's not well executed. So we would be saying, all right, let's put a routine together. And routines are brilliant because they give our brain sort of a sense of control in a situation. The brain is like, oh, this is quite an overwhelming situation. Yeah, but we have our routine. let's deliver our routine. So we would say something like, okay, let's get started in our stance. And then the next part would be our attention. So if we're thinking, right, this is the particular point that I want to put the ball, and we want to focus our attention there. Because what happens as well in high pressure situations is that athletes tend to focus on what's threatening. Right. So they focus on the keeper, for example. And again, when you look at the stats, focusing on the keeper, not an effective strategy for a successful penalty. So we would say, right, let's train our attention, for example, let's pick our spot. And even just getting them to kind of slow things down. So when the referee's blowing the whistle, don't rush, right? Take a breath, take a moment, do your routine, and then do your execution. So it's not that it has to be complicated. And I actually think that the simpler the routine, the better. But it's doing it, and we've got to practice it, and it's got to be well established. Because as you were mentioning earlier on, it's not a case of, oh, we can just go in, oh, well, sure, we'll just do that once and then it'll be fine in the penalty situation. It won't be. It has to be established in training. And I think coaches have to try and get creative about creating those sort of pressure situations in training. So, you know, you would do it as a, listen, I'm not going to talk to you. We're going to have people shouting from the sidelines, like anything that you can do to kind of say, we're doing this as if we're actually in this situation now. And I think a combination of those factors would really help.
It's really interesting what you say about you usually have your teammates behind you, but now all of a sudden you're standing up on your own. And I know you've spoken even on News Talk before about cohesion and team communication as opposed to individuality when it comes to penalties. Obviously, you only have the one player, but do you think it's important for teams to practice taking penalties as a team? Because like you said, if you're just there practicing your own spot kicks, it's different. Like you need to be in it together.
100%. And when you think about it, you know, the probably for the first player, there's less pressure on them. And one of the things that we know that can work really well, again, really interesting research that's been done, is that when the first couple of players go and they're successful, if they celebrate, so if there's a sense of, yeah, this is great, well done, we know that those positive emotions can pass on to the other team players. So that's why we would encourage, you know, to take that celebration and bring the team in with you on it. So there's less of a sense of it's all on me. And as you said, emphasize that we-ness. So even just kind of getting into this is our celebration. Oh, yeah, this is great. OK, yeah, yeah. And that gives that motivation. And it gives that bit of confidence. And absolutely, I think rehearsing that in training would be brilliant so that we have that set out. So again, it's I think it's cueing players as to what is helpful to do in this situation. So even just reminding them, you know, once you've taken that penalty, it's successful, celebrate, pass on those good emotions to the players who are coming behind you. And that can be really effective.
And from a goalkeeper's point of view then, you said, you know, they can focus on the threats. Is it really important for you as a keeper to make yourself as much of a threat as possible? I mean, the mind games you see in penalty shootouts are crazy, but do you think they're effective?
Yeah. And that's it. And it's going to depend on the player. It's going to depend on their approach. So we know that there's usually sort of three approaches for attention that players will take. They will either kind of focus in on their spot and they're just ignoring the keeper completely. He or she is just irrelevant. I'm going there and that's where my attention is going. What happens is when players start to get a bit anxious or a bit nervous, we're more likely to focus on the threat, which is the keeper. And then we start to try and read his or her behavior, like, what do I think they're doing? And then we kind of try and pick our spot from there. Or the third approach is sort of to look one way and say, and I'm going to put it over there. The most effective strategy is pick your spot and be just ignore the keeper. That's the most, again, going back to the science, that's the most effective response. So again, we've got to train players to be able to ignore them. But as I said, the keeper knows if someone's not really sure or someone's not particularly motivated to take this penalty, chances are the focus is going to go on them. And that's then when they can use their tactics to try and put them off.
In terms of this Irish team now, and any other team that has lost in a high pressure situation to penalties, what would your approach be to make sure that, because it's, you know, it's so likely that this would happen again, and it could happen in the Euros. Do you talk through this entire situation and say, look, this is what happened, this is what we need to work on? Or how does that approach go to make sure there's no, like, PTSD, for want of a better word?
Absolutely. And I think that's really, really good what you've suggested there about even having a conversation with it. Because if you sit down as a team, and you know, it's important to do an analysis on these types of situations, but even sit down with players and say, right, when it comes to penalty shootouts, are there any fears? You know, what is it that you might be worried about? And kind of going through those what ifs. Because oftentimes players, because as you said, there's so little time put into practicing and to training for penalties, actually give them the opportunity to sit down and talk about it and kind of do that analysis and how are you feeling and where was your mindset at, and to address some of those fears. And then once you do that, then you're going to be better prepared come the time. But I think, you know, we're always learning. That's us as humans, as athletes, as coaches, as managers. We don't know it all from day one and then just know everything going forward. We always have to take that attitude. Okay, we take this lesson. It's a disappointing one to learn, but we learn from it and we'd be better because of it. And I think we have to get to a place of saying, this is something that's worth investing our time into and our effort into. And again, and I think it helps to prepare the players then, so they feel, you know yourself, if you're going into an exam situation, you've done your study, you can walk in there and say, well, I've done everything I could possibly do, I'm prepared, I'm ready to go. Versus if you're saying, well, geez, we only touched on that once or twice, I didn't really open the books that much, and well, maybe I'll be fine. That's not a great mindset to be in. So I think, as you said, we've got to be able to say, okay, we learn from this. We apply it in training now. We make that time in there. We put in the effort. We work with the players individually as well to kind of look at what their approach is or what their thoughts are on it. Do they like them? Do they not like them? What are their fears? And then we address those, and we have that plan then for each player going forward. And as you said, spot on earlier on, collectively as a team, how are we approaching that? So doing the celebrations, passing on that confidence and things like that.
And I suppose finally, if I just in terms of this specific playing group, there was a lot of talk on why the game on Tuesday night in Dublin might have been pointless because it was just a friendly, and why make these two teams play after they'd been knocked out of the World Cup? But do you think it's good for them to have got together and played in front of the crowd again? So that's it. You know, it's better to do it almost immediately than have to wait another couple of months.
Absolutely. Oh, 100%. And any match is an opportunity, as you said, to be able to practice, whether it's routines, you know, you've got the fans, you've got the crowd, you've got that little bit of pressure. All right, understandably, it was a friendly, but there is still that sort of pressure. You're in your kit, you're on the pitch, and absolutely, I think we need to maximize all of those opportunities. I mean, that's why the penalties are tricky, because we don't get as many opportunities to practice. But again, there's so many different aspects of mindset, so many different aspects of strategy that we can practice in a friendly situation. So I think it's great. I mean, obviously, if there's a situation where somebody's injured and people need to rest and recoup, that's okay. But I think absolutely, let's take the learning while it's fresh, and let's get out there and see what can we do, what can we work on. And a match situation, even a friendly, is a great opportunity to do that. So 100%, I think it was a good shout.
Well, Aoife, thank you so much for that. Very enlightening. And the
Excellent.
myth, I think, I definitely don't think that penalties are a lottery anymore, for sure.
Yes, exactly. So we all need to get out there, practice, training, work hard. We'll get there.
Hello, and now we are joined, very unusually, on the line by Keith Tracy. Keith, how are you? How's the Zoom?
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Usually I'm in the studio, but no, it's great to be at home. Zoom is funny. Actually, I had to download it just for this. That's how off the Zoom track I am these days.
Oh, I think you're better off. It's absolutely freezing in here. So me and Rachel spent all of today chatting to different sports psychologists. It's been a week now since the penalty shootout defeat to Czechia. It's all kind of every pundit's been talking about it all week, from kind of player point of views. We wanted to get the psychologist point of view. Have you worked with one before? What do you think the merits of working with a sports psychologist is for a penalty shootout, as important as that was?
Well, I have worked with a sports psychologist before, and about 12 hours after I spoke to him, I ended up on loan at Sheffield United. So I didn't speak to sports psychologists very often, to be honest with you. And I think that's probably moved on in football now. I was doing Sligo against Shamrock Rovers, what was it, a month ago now for Virgin. And there was a woman taking players out, and she was talking to Graham Bourke and then Victor Oshanvuna, and I was actually talking to John Russell, the Sligo manager, and I said, who is that? And he said to me, that's a sports psychologist. And I said, that talking to a sports psychologist like 45 minutes before kickoff, it must be the new thing. It wasn't something I'd have been into, but the merits of speaking to somebody about it, I don't honestly get it. I didn't take a whole host of penalties in my career because I remember missing one against Crumlin for Belvedere and it scarred me. And then I took another one for Blackburn against Sporting Lisbon. I missed that one and that one scarred me. So I never liked taking penalties. And I used to practice them. I think every player practices penalties. Just, you know, you're finished on a Friday a little bit early before the game on a Saturday and you get the number two goalkeeper and you start rifling penalties in and you start taking the mick a little bit. But honestly, I don't think you can replicate the pressure of it. You know, if somebody said to me, Keith, go out to Abbottstown and start rifling penalties into the top corner, I reckon I could do it 9 out of 10 times. If you said to me, Keith, go out and take a penalty, and if you score, Ireland are going to the World Cup or going to a final to potentially get to the World Cup, all of a sudden it's very, very different. And that pressure just can't be replicated on a training ground. So although I understand the merits of your technique and, you know, all of that, as a footballer, as a professional footballer, you're working on your technique day in, day out, every minute of every training session. So rifling went in from 12 yards to make yourself feel better or, you know, have crowd noise in the background, I just don't think it can be replicated. And I think more to my point, I did Chechki against Denmark the other game, the game we all wanted to be involved in. Chechki won on penalties and three out of four Denmark players all missed penalties. The Chechki players, three out of four scored. And I would argue that on paper, all of the Denmark players are technically better and technically gifted more than the Chechki players. Yet the Chechki players scored.
Would you think then that it is coming down to some kind of psychology then, ma'am? I was chatting to Dr. Aoife Quinn today, sports psychologist, and she was saying that it really doesn't matter your technical ability as much. When you get to the point of penalties, it's your mental strength that's coming in. And she agreed with you that it's hard to replicate like a penalty shootout in a training ground, but just having one routine that you know what you're going to do when you pick the ball up, so you're not kind of standing on the penalty spot and all of a sudden you're like, Jesus, do I look at the keeper? Do I look at the ball? Do I engage with the crowd? And she said just making sure you have a routine that you know exactly what's going to happen, technical ability doesn't come into it as much then.
Yeah, and I get what you're saying, but, you know, if there's a technique, if after 120 minutes and you say, lads, who wants to take a penalty, and there's a really technically gifted player or there's somebody who runs around and breaks up the play and not as technically gifted, I know which one I'd lean towards taking a penalty, but I totally take your point that technically, sorry?
Which one would you be leaning towards?
Oh, the technically gifted player. Always the technically gifted player, just because the technically gifted player will generally play under pressure during the game and sort of, you just trust them a little bit more. And my mind would go to trust them that little bit more. But I have to say, some of the best penalty takers I've seen, when I was at Preston North End, Callum Davidson, the ex-Leicester and Scottish international, used to take our penalties and he used to just hit it as hard as he could. And I always said to him, Callum, like, you're not going to place it. And he always said to me, Keith, if I don't know where it's going, how can they know where it's going? And he used to hit it as hard as he could. And yeah, he scored more often than not. And look, we can debate the merits of it, but like some of the best penalty takers, when I think of the best penalty I've seen, I remember Pirlo playing for Italy against England, and Italy got a penalty and Joe Hart started giving him a little bit of lip in the 18-yard box before the penalty was taken. And of course, Pirlo being Pirlo decided, I'm going to do a Panenka, and absolutely made a show of Joe Hart. He dived one way and he slowly dinked it down the middle. And after it, Pirlo said, I just needed to teach the young pup a lesson. And I thought that was absolutely brilliant. But Pirlo also went on to miss 11 penalties in his career. So somebody with the composure of him and the technical ability of him can still miss 11 penalties throughout his career. I think Cristiano Ronaldo missed 35 penalties in his career. So if the likes of Ronaldo was missing that amount and Pirlo was missing that amount, I think you can go out and practice them all you want. But if the keeper goes the right way, the chances of him saving it, you know, increase dramatically. So you know, the worst thing for me was when I was addressing the penalty, I would always say, I'm going to go to my left because I was left-footed. So I would swerve it just outside the post and try and bring it in at the last second. You're playing a dangerous game there because you're thinking, if I don't quite get this right, I might not come back in time. So then you start thinking, I tell you what, I'll aim for the post and I'll bring it in a yard inside the post. Before you know it, you're hitting it straight down the middle and you're hoping the keeper doesn't stay where he is. It's a mental game that I was never any good at, but the merits of it will be debated all day long. But I think there is an element of lottery to it. It doesn't always go down to technical ability or how good you are as a player.
And would you subscribe at all to the... I hate when I see players doing this, and I know that I've never played high-level football, but you know when you see players stutter or run up and they're stopping and they're starting and they're... I don't like any of that. I think you're playing a risky game when it's already kind of a risky situation you're in. Why do you think players do that?
Well, if I've seen a player doing it, I mean, I can't remember the player that missed a penalty for Brentford, was it Django Otara? He missed a penalty and Keith Andrews said, you know, I see him doing them type of things in training all the time. If I was the manager of a Premier League football club and I seen a player practicing penalties and he was doing a hop, a skip and a jump and doing penenkis during the training session, I would say, look, if you're messing over there, that's no problem. But I would also take him to one side and say, you do that on a Saturday and you miss and there's going to be hell to pay, by the way. Is the hop and the skip and a jump, I was never into it. I think when you win a penalty, the percentage of you scoring is probably up around 75-80%. If you stutter your run-up and you kill your momentum as you're addressing the ball, I think all of a sudden that goes closer. The percentage, you start leaning into the goalkeeper again. I think you just, you know, put your foot through it and aim for the corner low and hard. It's as simple as that, but it's never that simple. Every time I went up, I'd be saying, go to the keeper's left. And as I started to get closer to the ball, it would be whip it across and Keith, go straight down the middle, Keith, and my head would just go all over the place. And I suppose I had a little bit of self-awareness because I just stopped taking penalties after that.
Because Rob Kelly, who was the sports psychologist that I was talking to today, what he works with is kind of teaching players to, you have made up your mind when you're already still at the kind of halfway line. You know exactly what you're doing and that you're going to walk up to that ball and you know in your head, I'm putting it in the bottom right or whatever. And there's no changing because the second you imagine yourself doing something else, you're already, as you said, your confidence is lacking and you're not going to be as effective as you can be. And then the last question that I asked him was, how do players, and I suppose you have a bit of experience, you've missed a penalty. How do you step up and take one again? Like Alan Brown, if for Ireland, the next time he has to take a penalty, whether it's for his national team or for his club, you know, how do players get back into that mindset of being willing to put their hand up and say, yeah, I'm going to take one again?
I think it just comes down to mental strength, to be completely honest with you, and just having that bit of inner confidence and that inner bit of belief that you're going to score the next one. And to be fair, look, I know Alan Brown missed a penalty. I'm sure he feels absolutely, you know, as low as a snake's belly. But I believe the environment, I listened to Troy speaking after it, saying, you know, he's not going to throw any shade on him. I'm sure the country isn't throwing any shade on Alan Brown. And there's not a lot of professional footballers that would be throwing shade on him, thinking, you know, technically it could have been a better penalty, of course. But if it wasn't the best stroke, it was fairly central. But I wouldn't have took one. And in that huddle, if somebody said, you know, who wants to take penalties, I'd have kept my arms down. I'd have said, look, I'll go before the goalkeeper. That's how nerve-wracking these things are. So I would have classed myself as a technically gifted, quite composed player. But when it came to penalties, I was all over the place. And when you look at the environment that Alan Brown is in now with the Irish squad, or was in with the Irish squad, I think it's quite a forgiving environment. When you look at when Bukayo Saka missed a penalty for England in the Euros, and you know that type of environment was absolutely red hot. And thankfully, Saka seems to have bounced back and be absolutely fine from it. But I'm sure the Irish lads will be fine. And although it's obviously a huge chance missed, we're all sitting here looking at Czechia beating Denmark and thinking that could have been us. I think there's an evolution in our play and we are getting better and stronger, and we've bridged that gap to the Euros proper or the World Cup proper.
Do you think, Keith, that, you know, when you said there, no one in the country is laying the blame on anybody for missing penalties because we all know how difficult it is. But do you think sometimes we lean into the narrative that it's a lottery because we want to forgive players that miss and it's such a hard thing to do? So we'd all go, ah, oh, like it is a bit of a lottery and we're not going to make this person a scapegoat because it's not in our, you know, it's not in our national instinct to do that.
Yeah, it was strange. There was a lot of people saying to me prior to the Czechia game, you know, if this goes all the way and we go to penalties, I back us to win it because we have Quiveen Kelleher. I think Quiveen's a brilliant goalkeeper, one of the best goalkeepers in the Premier League right now, and his ceiling is so high that he could go on to be an elite goalkeeper. But the goalkeeper for Czechia plays for PSV. He's not exactly a Sunday League goalkeeper that, you know, you can just smack it down the middle and it's going to go in regardless. So it was never going to be as straightforward as that. Quiveen got so close to the forced penalty as well. He sort of gets his hand to it. If it's a bit stronger, maybe he saves it. I'm very reluctant, you know, and I'm sure everybody is to give out about any of the players. I thought they all emptied the tank, but missing a penalty, it really is a lottery, to be honest, because it's up to the goalkeeper as well. And we're all saying here that, you know, you make your mind up and you don't change. If you see the goalkeeper reading his Lucozade bottle and it says Tracy's last four penalties, he's gone to the left, all of a sudden you're thinking, well, I always go to the left. He knows I always go left now, so I'm going to go right. But maybe he's thinking, I'm going to go right, so I go down the middle. And then when you take your fourth step, he's still standing in the middle of the goal and you start to panic. And it's just, it's crazy. But mental strength comes into it. And sometimes, you know, just get a centre half up there and tell him to well you.
Yeah, it's very easy for us to talk about it here. I'm well aware.
And kind of, you said you were, just the last thing, Keith, you said you were working the Czechia-Denmark game. This is absolutely unrelated to anything. But are you happier that the Czechia went through and that we ultimately lost the team that ended up qualifying for the World Cup? Or would you kind of, you'd wanted Denmark to beat them for what they did to us?
Yeah, to be honest, I wanted Denmark to give Czechia a right pumping. I wanted them to beat them 5-0. I wanted to be able to say that, well, even if we'd have got Denmark, they'd have probably done that to us. So, you know, it's better to go out in the semis than the final. But having done the game, I looked at Denmark and some of the names on the list, like Rasmus Højlund, Christian Eriksen come off the bench, still very capable of making things happen. And they've got some wonderful players, but they didn't really turn up on the night. And I give Czechia a lot of credit for that. They harried and harassed in the middle of the park and, you know, didn't get cut open too many times. But the overriding feeling was that Denmark were there for the taking, and had that been Denmark in Dublin against us, I'd have probably backed us to go through. So we were very, very close in the end. You know, if we'd somehow come out on top in that penalty kick against Czechia, we'd have possibly been going to the World Cup, which doesn't make anybody feel better.
No, and listen, at least we have the Euros to look forward to. We have a young squad and the manager who's going to be sticking with us for a while. So not all doom and gloom. Keith, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks, girls.
I think they'll go all the way to the final, to be honest.
Yeah?
Yeah. I believe in Mike Hankey, and I suppose they're good at football. They just have to believe in themselves.
I love playing 12. I love playing 10. I love being on the pitch, to be honest.
Are you confident?
Absolutely not.
No!
Thank you for all the supporters. Thank you for the team. Thank you, France. Merci la France. Merci les baguettes. Merci les croissants. Je vous aime. I love you.